I am Don Tess, better known as the Don O'Beer.
And I'm the one and only M. Sauter, better known as Pints and Panels.
Welcome to episode 41 of the All About Beer podcast. Every 2 weeks, we talk with leading experts and take a deep dive into one topic in beer. This week on the show, we're going to talk about decoction mashing. I'm warning our listeners now, I'm going to get nerdy on this. So,
surprise.
Before we do that, though, please visit allaboutbeer.com and follow us on social media at allaboutbeer. And visit patreon.com/allaboutbeer to support this show and others. Em, do you think decoction mashing is worth the extra effort or a stupid idea propagated by mash holes?
Mash holes. You know, to be honest, I can't really tell the difference. If you put two beers in front of me and you told me one was decocted and one wasn't, I don't know if I'd be able to tell the difference, but I'm really excited to talk with both our guests and I'd love to be proven wrong one day. Maybe there's something I'm missing.
Yeah, okay. I respect that. Well, we're going to talk to two brewers and we're going to figure it all out. But first, if you would like to help support the All About Beer podcast, please reach out to podcast@allaboutbeer.com. Speaking of supporting the show, here is a word from our sponsors.
Estrella Galicia, where brewing excellence has been a family tradition since 1906. They are all about lager, rooted in German brewing heritage. Maintaining their commitment to tradition, they brew exclusively in their original brewery in La Coruña, Spain. Each beer boasts its own distinct recipe. No shortcuts, no compromises. They shun high-gravity tricks and avoid additives, even in their alcohol-free beers, and stick firmly to traditional methods. Their passion for beer sets them apart as they embrace and celebrate the art of brewing. At Estrella Galicia, they love beer above all things. Experience the difference and know more about it on Instagram at Estrella Galicia USA.
Chris Johnson is the head brewer and co-owner of Green Bench Brewing Co. and Web City Center. An industry professional for over 14 years, Chris is also a founding faculty member of the USF St. Petersburg Brewing Arts Program, the vice president of beer culture, a board member of the Michael James Jackson Foundation for Brewing and Distilling, and a founding board member of the National Black Brewers Association of America. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're excited. I'm excited anyways, because this is
Don's a nerd. Loves, anything malt or, he's ready. All right, go ahead, Don.
Let's start with the basics. What is decoction mashing and how is it different?
Oh, wow. So you're going to start with a basic loaded one.
no big deal.
Yeah, that's easy. Okay, so the first thing, what is decoction mashing? Very as simply as I can, it's a process in which you take a portion of the mash, you bring it to a boil for a specific amount of time, and then you add it back to the main mash. And the process here, or the reasoning, is to increase the temperature first and foremost of the main mash by using this process, right? So you're at one temperature, you pull a portion, you bring it to a boil, you add it back, that's going to increase the temperature. So it's a process developed originally to sort of create or get to different temperatures throughout the process. I guess, you know, historically speaking, you would have a brewery that would have one vessel with a heat source, not say multiple. And, you know, that energy is not easy to come by. You were building a fire sort of underneath at least one of those vessels. So you kind of use that one vessel as your heat source in which to bring temperatures up and down throughout your process. And so that's kind of the very basic process, is that separation and the heating. How it's different is a little more complicated. I would say, generally speaking, most brewers, I'm air quoting a little bit here, most brewers, especially in say North America or sort of modern breweries, maybe that learn through craft brewing or home brewing, generally are going to follow processes that are sort of more British single infusion. That is to say, you're mashing it at one temperature and that's it. You know, if you were to say to a German brewer single infusion, that actually means step mashing as we understand it, maybe as you know, US North American craft brewers, which is to say you start at a temperature, you add heat to go to different steps throughout the temperature of the resting processes in the mashing, which will activate different things. and then you'll end with, say, a mash out step. And that is to a, say, a German brewer, a single infusion beer. To us, single. We call that,
they're calling it single in terms of then single vessel, but they're doing step infusion. I understand.
Exactly. Well, and even actually some German brewers would even venture to say that even if they might actually still do one single infusion rest, like say, you know, a 65 Celsius, which is like 149 or so, you know, or up to maybe 63, which I believe is like 152, 153 Fahrenheit, and then just go to mash out. Sometimes they'll even bypass, say, an alpha amylase rest. Sometimes that includes that. But yeah, to your point, it's just a single vessel, single process. They're really just looking for one step to convert, and then they're ending that conversion with a mash out step. But most brewers, you know, say craft brewers, would think about single infusion as you're just going in at like 150, 152, maybe as low as 148 or so, and then that's it. And you rest there for your 20, 30, 60 minutes, and then you're Vorloffing and laddering.
Okay.
So a single, single infusion mash is going to take a couple hours or so. By contrast, how long is a decoction mash day for you?
It varies. I mean, some of our single infusions are super quick. I mean, like, you know, a lot of our single infusions will just, the grains are so modified these days, which you'll hear that a lot talking to people about decoction mashing. And it is true. Like the grain shows up to the brewer basically like ready to make wort. So like you could, like, it just, all it needs is like sprinkle some water on it and you got sugar water. So like a lot of them will mash in and it'll be like a 5 minute rest with like a 25 minute Vorloff just for clarification and get everything mixed in really nicely. So you're talking about a 30 minute rest and then we're loudering, which can be, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hour louder and then an hour boil and then a 30 to 45 minute knockout. You know, you're done with your day basically on your brew day. Decoction definitely takes a little bit longer. I mean, you know, our single infusions don't take too much longer. Like I would add at probably an hour to like it all, like an hour and a half is really a good bet. That'll give you like a little bit of leeway on either side, but that's going to have you, you know, you're going to go in, for us, we go in at like basically a proteolytic rest, which is, you know, your protein mash, which or protein rest, which is really, we're just there for like a brief time to check pH and, you know, make sure any of, if we're adding any salts or anything to it at the time, or brewers, you know, salts, we'll do that. Then we'll step immediately to a beta amylase rest, and then rest there for, you know, a period of time, maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And then we'll step to say an alpha amylase rest for 10 to 15 minutes. And then usually at that point we're separating for a decoction. And it depends, because some of our single infusions are really short, right? Or I'm sorry, our single decoctions are very short in the sense that maybe sometimes that decoction only really comes up to boil before we add it back to the main mash. Oftentimes it's, you know, it's more like a 5 minute boil in which we're actually boiling the decoction volume. But sometimes it's literally we come to a boil and we move it over to keep that pale color, to keep the melanoid in low, really just sort of rupture some of those starches, you know, with thermal degradation, and then bring it back, which at that point is going to bring you up to a mash out step anyway.
So you just kind of touched upon it a little bit, but what is the purpose of decoction mashing? Obviously stepping through the temperatures, as you said, but in the decoction, you're boiling it. And so why would you do that? And how is it better? Which I realize is kind of a loaded question because some people don't think it's better. So, what's the point, I guess?
Yeah, great question. I guess, you know, to go ahead and underline something that you just said there, it is preference based. Not everybody believes that it is better. And there are definitely going to always be some trade-offs. If you change your process, you are gaining something, but potentially losing another. So you have to figure out how to manage that yourself. So the reason that we do it first and foremost is flavor. I can taste the difference between sort of our decocted beers and our non-decocted beers. There is a malt flavor, a malt, I want to say richness, but it's that's almost like a little simplified to me. And richness is also something that maybe you can get with, depending on how you mash it. How you boil your decoction and how long, and the makeup of your mash itself. But it's more like a pure expression of malt profile that I get. The best way I can describe it is So our the beer that we make the most that is decocted is a beer called Postcard Pils. It's like one of our core brands. And we do a single decoction on that. And the single infusion is very, very, very good. It is, however, I find by the third one that I drink, I figured it all out. There's not much there for me to explore anymore. And that's a great experience. I find with the decocted version, by the third beer, I'm still like, damn, that character is still standing out to me. Like the malt profile is still interesting. And it's not sort of faded in my memory a little bit. I haven't like really moved on from the experience of that beer. And to me, that's ultimately why I usually will decoct. Otherwise, it's to get some more complex flavors. Sometimes we decoct for fermentability. You can get increased fermentation or fermentability with decoction, which is sort of maybe a different process than what I just alluded to in those steps. Mm-hmm. But you can decoct for fermentability as well.
Okay.
Besides Postcard, what other beer styles in your lineup do you do decoctions on?
That's a good question too. So like, so of our core brands, Postcard is the only one that's decocted, right? So we have mm-hmm. like an IPA, which obviously is a single infusion beer, actually two IPAs are single infusion beers. We also have an American style light lager, and that one is a single infusion as well. But in our, you branch that out a little bit. One of our seasonals, Fest beer, every year we do a double decoction on that beer. We have some other year round beers that we kind of keep on that, you know, aren't necessarily in our, you know, quote unquote core lineup. Mm-hmm. Polenica, for example, that's a, it's a Czech style pale lager. We do three decoctions on that one. Tmavé Pivo, a Czech style dark lager. We do two decoctions. We do a lot of German lagers as well. There's Bay Pils, which stands for Bayerische Pils, which is, you know, Bavarian pils basically. That's a single decoction. Pale lager beer is a Helles. We do kind of a sort of a double decoction mash on that one. We use a process called Kesselmation, which is kettle mashing. A lot of this stuff, if you're ever interested, like Nartzis, Dr. or Professor Nartzis and Kuntz, I read a lot of their work. And so they talk a lot about all these different processes. So we use like a kettle mash process on that one. Export is kind of a double decoction kettle mash as well. So yeah, quite a few.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
when you opened, when did you start decocting? Is this a recent thing, or were you like, when you opened Green Bench, you were like, I'm going to decoct?
No, we definitely didn't do it when we started. Actually, you know, I'd be remiss if I also didn't mention that generally all of our smoked lagers are also decocted.
There,
so I want to make sure I plug that. When we first opened, we weren't making lagers at all, actually. And part of that was not because I didn't want to. It was really because I didn't know how to. I wasn't trained as a lager brewer. I was trained as, you know, this single infusion, almost British style brewery or brewer. You know, I was a home brewer, and then didn't really make lager much here in Florida because, you know, you kind of got made fun of if you did. It was, you know, people would be like, number one, it's Florida, there's tons of lager on the shelf already, why would you make it? You know, the idea was that you would make something that you can't really get, which at the time was basically IPAs. And then the other reasoning behind it was, well, why would I make a lager when I can make like four or five IPAs in the same amount of time? Like, it just doesn't make sense. So I never was trained to make it. You know, I worked at Cigar City. We'd never made lager when I was there. And then the next job I had, which was actually at our home brew shop, after Cigar City, we opened a brewery there, and it was similar. We would make a few lagers, but it was, you know, single infusion stuff. And I'll be honest with you, I think lagers were very mysterious to me because they were complicated, but not something that I had the foundational knowledge to be able to quite understand, because if I was going to do it, I wanted to do it really well. Otherwise, I wasn't going to do it at all. And so at the beginning, we weren't doing that, but I always knew I wanted to. And so about 2 years into us being open was when I started to explore, okay, I want to start making lagers, but I don't know what style I want to make. It's going to be a Pilsner because I want to make a Pils as a core brand to start with, but I don't know what that's going to look like. So in tandem, I was working on Postcard while I was working on Bench Life, our premium lager, which gave me the flexibility because that allowed me to bring yeast in that I could use multiple generations of by having two brands to work on. And the beer that kind of stood out to me, you know, at the time I was like, you know, you, you'd see German pils around, and I kind of had an idea of what German pils was: pale, dry, bitter, you know, noble hops, you know, imported, you know, continental pilsner malt, lager yeast, cold, you know, aging, fermentation, all that kind of stuff. Czech lagers were a lot more mysterious to me, because I didn't really understand them. I think, and honestly, I think nobody did, at least the brewers that I drank from, because every one of them tasted so different, and they almost like tasted like, well, this is basically the same as a German lager, or this is like, it just didn't, I didn't understand it at all. And then I came across American pils when I went back home. I'm from Memphis. I went home to visit my family for the first time since we opened the brewery like 3 years in. And I had Tiny Bomb, and I was like, oh, this is the one. And so kind of, you know, learned from them about that beer, came back, started making Postcard that way. It was a single infusion beer. And of course, very soon after, I mean, I'm researching and I'm reading very, very soon after. And I had already met her, Ashley, and obviously Bill too, when they were at Prost. I had already met them before this, like years before. But then they had opened Bierstadt, and then I would hang out with them a lot, and we'd talk a lot because we had a rapport and got along. And, you know, I think that's the best, probably the best beer in the country to me is, you know, Slow Pour Pils. And so just falling in love with that and learning from them and their process, I decided I wanted to get better and learn more. And so and I wanted our beers to continue to challenge not just us, but our market, and to continue to try and be as good as I possibly could be, and as we could be. So I installed a decoction vessel. That was in like 2019. And we started, you know, I built our brew house to be able to do that. So it's completely designed and engineered to be able to move mash back and forth and kind of do it, you know, as seamlessly as possible, and as well as we can. So then it was the journey of trying. And, you know, honestly, the first beers coming out that were decocted were not as good as the ones that were single infusion. It took us a lot of time, and it's, I'm still learning, to be quite honest with you. I'm still, you know, fiddling around and changing stuff, you know, when it comes to the decoction side.
If I were to put 10 beers in front of you, could you pick out which ones were decocted and which were infusion?
I think it depends. I mean, I think that, I mean, there's some well-made single infusion beers, and I don't know if on the first beer I'd be able to pick it completely out. To me, sometimes it's on that, like I said earlier, it's almost like that third beer that really hits me where I'm like, This one has more going on. And if it's usually my beers, I can usually tell right away.
Right. That's
good. Yeah. But I don't know if I'm not confident enough to say that I would be able to tell right off the bat, you know, with just a couple samples.
Right. Okay. What would you say? I mean, it does seem to be kind of a divisive issue. So what would you say to someone who says, oh, you don't need decoction mashing, the grain's fully modified, and you can mimic decoction mashing by, you know, using a melanoid in malt or whatever? What would you say to a skeptic?
Well, I think if that's what they said to me, I'd say, you're right. You don't need to do it. The grain is very modified, and you can make phenomenal beers, and you can mimic the flavor. Now, can you make it taste just like it? I can't. You know, so like they might be skilled enough to do that, but I'm not. And so, you can get close. I think, you know, you can make some of those characters available, using melanoid malt, like you mentioned, or processed stuff, you know, mixing up your grain, you know, using maybe some grains that are a little bit more, you know, there's a reason Carahel exists, right? You know, with the Weirmann. So Weirmann, you can use Weirmann pills and a 5% of Carahel, which is basically like a C10 malt specifically for Helles. And it's to create a little bit more color and a little bit more sweetness and malt character. So yeah, you can mimic it by all means. Yeah. And I, you know, I've had phenomenal single infusion beers before, and, you know, that are German lagers and even Czech lagers. But you know, you ask a Czech brewer and they would just vehemently tell you can't make Czech lager without decocting. Like that's, they've literally said that to me and many other people. So it just depends on what your goals are. You know, like decoction isn't necessarily a thing that I think you should get into just because, like, there has to be purpose, I think, really, to make it work. And it doesn't mean like your first shot is going to be great. Mine wasn't. Took me a long time to figure it out and to dial it in. So, but it's fun. You know, the more that I know, you know, that's why I got into beer originally, is because I realized real quick I was never going to learn everything. And I wanted to spend the rest of my life learning and trying to get better. So,
amen.
That's the goal.
Amen. Awesome. Well, speaking of learning, if people want to keep up to date with what Green Bench is doing, can you share your social media handles and website?
Yeah, of course. Greenbenchbrewing.com, our website. You'll find, you know, everything about us and what we got going on. I think you look up that up on Facebook as well. You know, Green Bench Brewing on there. Instagram, we're pretty active on there. So at Green Bench Brewing. We also have, you know, a second location. Well, it's on site, but it's our second tasting room called Web City Cellar. We turned 5 in a week.
And James Beard nominated as well. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, we're a James Beard Cima finalist this year, which is crazy. And means a lot. It's something special for our team. I think they work really hard and that's a concept that's very, very unique. So we're excited about sharing it with as many people as possible. So it's exciting.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for your time.
Yeah. Anytime. So much.
Cheers, y'all.
Cheers. And we'll be right back with Zach Adams of Fox Farm Brewery right after these messages.
At Estrella Galicia, they are passionate brewers. Their meticulous care extends to each ingredient, recognizing that water transcends its mere classification as an ingredient. It is a key player that intricately shapes and defines their distinctive beer recipes. They don't have a hidden spring or any secret water source. They proudly utilize water from the local reservoir, which is an ecologically protected UNESCO Biosphere Reserve. The water is of exceptionally high quality and has a low mineral profile. In essence, the water that any brewmaster would dream of.
Zach Adams is the founder and head brewer at Fox Farm Brewery in Salem, Connecticut. Started in 2017 together with his wife Laura, Fox Farm resides on a 30-acre former dairy farm where the original barn houses the brewery's primary production facility and tasting room. Since opening, Fox Farm has developed a reputation for thoughtful variety with a particular emphasis on traditional European styles and mixed fermentation beers. Zach and Laura live just behind the brewery with their 3 children, Vincent, Lily, and Nora. Welcome to the show, Zach.
Thanks for having me.
So your brewery, Fox Farms, only recently started decoction mashing. So was this something you always wanted to do, but only now you have the capability, or like, what is the reason you've decided to make the change?
Yeah, so I think it's something we've thought about weaving in here for a long time, but like a lot of breweries, there were a number of factors that kind of held us back before kind of rolling this process out and introducing it to some of our beers. You know, from the get-go, like a lot of breweries, it was space and financial constraints that kind of simplified our brew house design, and then also just experience, you know, with infusion mashing or step mashing. And then also just a underestimation of what lagers would mean to us and our customers. We commissioned our brew house 8 or 9 years ago, started brewing about 7 years ago. And at that time we had hopes for what lager would mean to us, but our kind of evolution as a brewery has really surprised us in a way that folks are embracing those beers to a much greater degree than we could have hoped for. And it's allowed us the opportunity to really stretch out creatively and expand the breadth of our lager offering.
Okay.
And so over time, it's just been kind of gnawing at us that this is a process we'd love to introduce. But in the meantime, there's a lot of reasons also of why not to necessarily jump into it. You know, I think if you talk to a lot of lager brewers, there's a long list of items before kind of even any mash regimen that they would list as being really fundamental to making great, great lager beer. And by not having that variable to tinker with, it really forced us to focus on all those other things that we could execute better and really hone. So it kind of allowed us that space to really kind of simplify our mashing procedures and rely on maybe a deft use of specialty malts, you know, where needed, and focus on other things. But eventually over time, we we thought it'd be worth the investment and really an investment in time and labor more than anything at this point to execute those.
Mm-hmm. Em?
So I want to start off by saying I do have a caveat about this episode. I do work part-time at Fox Farms, so I just want everybody to know that, like, I have an inside to this. So hello, Zach. Saw you yesterday. I wanted to ask you, when did you went to the Czech Republic recently with a bunch of other brewers? Did that trip have any effect on when you were going to start decoction? Because I've worked there for many years, and I just found, like, you know, we haven't been doing this that long. So,
yeah, that was like really very informative and formative as it when it comes to at least my own views of decoction mashing. And I probably didn't answer Don's question quite as completely as I should. And that was really kind of part of the number one reason we began decocting was for our Czech styles. So we felt like we were making really, really tasty lager beer that was ours, you know, without having those capabilities. We were still making wonderful beer, but it was also kind of part of our, you know, our identity or style, if you will. But, you know, drinking through Czech beer fresh at the source, having exposure to Czech brewmasters and really developing understanding for that culture, we felt like if we were going to continue to make beers that were represented as Czech inspired or modeled after Czech beer in any way, we owed it to our drinkers and to that brewing culture to start decocting. Because over there, decoction, it's really just synonymous virtually with mashing and almost regardless of style, it's a process that's going to find its way into the beer. Could even be IPA, and you know, decoction is gonna pop in. It's just such an integral part of their brewing culture. So to have a Czech brewmaster tell you, you know, you should really, really figure out a way to make this happen and try and decoct, I think you'll find it to be worth it. That left an impression on us where it's like, okay, if we're going to continue to brew these beers, we should probably give it a go.
Okay. So you mentioned when you built your brew house, it wasn't, you know, necessarily set up for decoction. And so I understand you've had to kind of Frankenstein your decoction system. Can you describe that a bit?
Yeah. So fortunately we have a big, like 3-inch port, in our kind of grain out area that, is situated below our screens, but in an area that allows the mash to flow through. So pulling out of our combination mash louder ton was a relatively easy step. So it was really investing in a pump capable of moving the mash and then hoses and other fittings to bring it over to our kettle. The investment in the equipment was really just that, the hoses, the pump, and the fittings. But the greater investment is in our time. So we bring it over into the kettle and use our lower jacket, which is pretty much just like the floor of the kettle. And we have to stir constantly, keeping things mixing from a temperature perspective and to prevent any sort of scorching. It's a steam jacket system, so not necessarily as concerned about scorching as if you had a direct fired system, but still something we have to really keep an eye on. And between those movements back and forth, if we're doing a double decoction, it takes our 15 barrel brew day into the territory where we typically can have a 30 barrel brew day. Lines up almost exactly with our 30 barrel brew day schedule. So it's a huge investment on our time as brewers and makes for a little bit more of a heavy lifting sort of day.
Thank you.
Yeah. So now that I say we, cause I've been there for 6 years. So now that you have, but we have before beers and then after beers, now that you're decocting, can you describe the difference between the two, if any?
So that's the other, you know, not necessarily resistance, but maybe procrastination towards starting this process is, at least thus far for us and in my own experience as a drinker, it's a very, very fine difference that we're finding in these beers. And again, born out of, you know, drinking more Czech beer fresh at the source and thinking very critically about it. You know, there's that magic there in Czech beer of a fullness and depth of malt character, while still finishing relatively dry and drinkability. And that's something, you know, we felt like we were finding in our beers to some degree, but to continue to push on that and really kind of balance those two seemingly opposing qualities, right? Fullness and drinkability, is what we think decoction is maybe helping with in some of these beers for us. So we've done side by sides, of some of our Czech inspired beers, where both are in stream, hitting the lager tank at a similar time, ready for package at a similar time. And I'm not sure most drinkers would pick up on it, but our kind of level of intimacy with these beers, we can find this tiny little difference. And it's, I guess, kind of what we do as brewers, right? We toil and struggle over, you know, small little improvements just to make the beer, you know, 2% better. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. The difference between good beer and great beer is tiny, tiny things, if you ask me. But
yeah, I mean, we made our brew day almost twice as long to make the beer, like I said, maybe, you know, 2 to 5% better if you're going to try and throw a number out there, and seemingly crazy, but yeah.
Any visual aspect? Like, I'm wondering if there's better foam cap or anything like that.
The verdict's out on foam. That's been kind of a tough one for us to evaluate thus far. Okay. But attenuation has improved ever so slightly. Getting like 3 or 4 tenths of a degree Play-Doh, greater attenuation. Color, just a little bit of pickup. Like I said, it's a steam jacketed kettle. So we're not really getting crazy melanoid formation, and but we are noticing a little bit of color pickup. But you know, this, I should say, the second kind of reason we felt like we were ready for introducing decoction over and above, you know, representing Czech styles as best we could is the set of variables that has opened up for us. We have spent, you know, the past 7 years kind of refining our lager beer with all those important variables I'd mentioned before, you know, that we might put above a mash regimen. But at this point, we're kind of ready to open up a whole nother set. And decoction does that for you. And I should say, like, one thing I could kind of knock about the decoction conversation is I feel like in certain, like, beer fan circles, it's kind of become a little bit binary. Like, does the brewery do it? Do they not? Is this beer decocted? Is it not? Therefore, it's better if it's decocted. I think it's kind of an oversimplification of things, you know, given all of those other important factors, but also, you know, what goes into it and you know, how long are you running your decoctions? You know, how long are you boiling that mash for? It's gonna change, you know, the appearance and what comes out of that whole regimen. So we feel like, you know, it's kind of opened up a whole set of variables where, you know, if we're going to decoct our Helles versus, you know, our Polutomave Czech Amber, like, we might run that decoction a little bit differently. And that's a fun new kind of territory for us to tread.
Mm-hmm. It's a whole, like, yeah, like you say, decoction isn't binary. It's a whole another toy to play with.
Exactly.
So here you are. Are you glad you went down the decoction road, or do you, you know, you mentioned it doubles your brew day. Is it worth it?
I think it is worth it. You know, once we've started introducing it to our beers and we are happy with the results, it's kind of, you know, as difficult as it is, at least on our system, we're not going to make changes that are going to roll back any quality improvements that we've found. So,
right.
Yeah, it's just something we'll deal with. So if we ever, you know, do find the space or whatever to maybe streamline our, our brew house to make decoction a little more purposefully part of it. Maybe that'll ease things a little bit, but in the meantime, we'll kind of roll up our sleeves and just deal with it and continue to weave it into our beers in ways that we think make sense and can find those tiny little improvements.
Great. Awesome. Well, thank you, Zach. Where can people follow you and Fox Farm on social media, website, that sort of stuff?
Fox Farm Beer and foxfarmbeer.com. And then same thing for any social handles, Fox Farm Beer.
Awesome. Thank you, Zach.
Cool, yeah, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. And we just installed a third Lucre tab. So our Lucre tap. So come in, come and enjoy some beer at Fox Farm, and maybe I'll pour you a beer. I'm there like once a month.
If you're lucky, so, you'll get out.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Zach.
Thank you, Zach.
You guys. Thank you.
So, Em, are you now a decoction disciple?
I think I am. Like, I really, I love the passion. You know, does it make the beer 100 times better? I mean, no. Can most people tell the difference? No. But people do it because they want the traditional aspects of brewing, the passion, the time, the effort, the sweat. It shows that Chris and Zach love beer, and it's always great to see.
Yeah. I appreciate that dedication. I am very fond of saying, you know, that the difference between great beer and good beer is a bunch of small things. And I think that decoction mashing is one of those small things.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. Great. Please visit allaboutbeer.com and follow us on social media at allaboutbeer. Please visit patreon.com/allaboutbeer to support this show and others. And if you have any questions for the experts, please email us at podcast@allaboutbeer.com. That's also the email for feedback, suggestions, or to inquire about supporting the show through advertising. Before we go, this is just a friendly reminder to subscribe and rate this podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. It takes just a few seconds and really helps us out. Deb, how can people reach out to you?
I am at Pints and Panels across all social media, and my website is www.pintsandpanels.com. And you, Don?
I am at The Dawn of Beer on X, Threads, and Instagram, and people can drop me an email at don@thedawnofbeer.com. Here's a final word from our sponsor.
At Estrella Galicia, as passionate brewers, safeguarding the invaluable resource of water is at the core of their commitment. Through a combination of sustainable practices and innovative technology, they've significantly reduced their water consumption year after year. In 2008, for example, their water usage was at around 5 liters per barrel of beer brewed. Fast forward to today, and they're proud to report that they significantly slashed that figure to 3.6 liters. This achievement is not just a testament to their dedication to brewing excellence, but also a demonstration of the broader commitment to environmental responsibility. Their commitment extends beyond the confines of the brewery. They're dedicated to preserving the natural treasure of water for the city of A Coruña. By adopting environmentally friendly practices, they aim to contribute to the long-term sustainability of this vital resource. To learn more about Estrella Galicia, follow them on Instagram at Estrella Galicia USA.
This show is produced by All About Beer. Visit allaboutbeer.com for articles, notes on this show and others, and to connect via the newsletter and social media. Cheers.
Cheers, everyone. Drink decoction.
Yes.